Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour for January 30th, 2020. A lot of topics to cover tonight. First of all, this is a major, major issue that has been going on, not with just my water filter company, but with literally everybody in this industry. It's not something you're really being told, but I'm probably the first person to actually announce this. But you over the decades, literally decades, I've been selling these things for two decades now, literally. I went with other brands, then I eventually had my own brand, etc. But there, because of the world economy, the way things are moving, the stainless steel is now, the stainless steel containers are now getting nearly impossible to get. And so anyway, that's been an issue. We've been fighting this for a long time. We've looked at retooling, and it's just been a real problem. And the problem is in the stainless steel supply chain. Let me give you another example of a similar situation in another industry. Say that you're a cell phone manufacturer, and or you're some kind of device manufacturer, like say, Bluetooth device. Something like that. Well, because of the auto industry using massive amounts of lithium in lithium-ion batteries, because they're powering automobiles now, not just a cell phone, automobiles and buses and other major, I mean, they're putting in major lithium-ion battery packs in, say, Australia or in other locations to bolster three-blade wind turbines that don't work. That's another story. But the lithium industry in the world is really under stress. And there was a coup. I mean, this is to the level this is getting to. There was a coup in Bolivia where the duly elected president was forced out of office, and they started killing. They had a military uprising and started killing people in the legislature in Bolivia, forcing the president out. He flew to Mexico and got out of there, and then they forced his resignation at gunpoint. And it's all over lithium. Over lithium. Bolivia doesn't have anything. It's a hot, dry country. Believe me, there's not a lot there. There's a funny scene in the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kids, if you ever watch that movie. And getting towards the end, they go down to Bolivia. Butch and the Sundance Kid go down there with the girl. And so they get off the train, and they're in Bolivia. I mean, Bolivia has not changed a lot since then. This was in the 1800s, of course. But, Bolivia is not a country that's got a lot. You know, it's not a tourist destination. It doesn't have a lot of natural resources. But what it has, it has a salt lake up at the northwest corner of the country, and it is the world's largest lithium deposit, literally. It has 25% of the known supply in the world of lithium. And so anyway, this is the kind of thing that's going on in the world because of the changes that are going on. Supply and demand are starting to get iffy. And something is going on in the stainless steel market as it applies to getting the supplies in for stainless steel containers. And all of my competition are having these problems. They can't get the stainless steel container. So what does Jim McKenna do? What does Professor James McKenna do? Something like this. I have to roll with the punches. I'm not going to go out and solve the world's stainless steel problem overnight. And neither is anybody else. But I do have a solution, and it's a good one. It's a really good solution. The people are used to the stainless steel because looking in the kitchen, it looks very nice. But there is a solution. I've looked at going to plastic. I used to sell a plastic large water filter, and that became, there were some just issues with supply and demand there. But the thing that now is currently I'm going to move to is called stoneware. And it's going to be a little bit more expensive. But right now, my prices for the stainless steel water filters are much less than anybody in my competition. If you look at what other people are selling and you look at the quality of my water filter elements, nobody can touch them. Where you have so much removed, all of the testing is done, and also they remove arsenic and fluoride in the filter itself. Nobody else has that. Everybody else requires you to have an add-on, and they don't tell you. It's down at the bottom. It's in fine print at the bottom. They don't tell you, and I'm not going to name brands, but they're all out there. If you go to any other brand and you've purchased one or you're thinking of purchasing one, ask them this simple question. Does your filter, your primary filter that sits inside the top container of your water filter, does that filter element remove arsenic and fluoride? And they will tell you, if they're honest, they will tell you, no, it does not. And so what's the issue? Mine take out arsenic and fluoride and a lot of others. Also, my filters are tested for the lifetime of the filters. Now, here's the issue with a lot of the filters out there, the filter elements, is they do a two-hour test. Well, then, and it removes certain quantities of whatever they say, the pollutants or whatever. And then they say that their filters are good for 5,000 gallons. We call it the 50-gallon test, the 5,000-gallon claim. But just ask that simple question. So on with this dialogue here. The situation is the stainless steel world situation is not going to change. I've got orders that some customers are waiting, and I have to, like I say, I got to roll with the punches. So I have to tell people that let's go. I will, for those customers, I will eat the difference. It's about a $40 increase in price for the full size. And by the way, I will also add here that the Traveler, which is the smaller kitchen stainless steel model, I have available. And those, I believe, will continue to be available into the future. But they're a little smaller. And, I use a Traveler myself. I have a number of different places where I have water filters. And I like the Travelers. They're small. If you have a full family, then the full-size kitchen, of course, model is better. One thing about the stoneware is it has a bigger water capacity, quite a bit bigger water capacity, almost double the water capacity as the stainless steel. And so anyway, this is what's going on. So just to summarize, my water filter elements are made in our own factory in the United States, so there's no problem with the filter elements. That's going to continue on. There's no change there. The stainless steel container, that's what I call the kitchen standard, that's the one that has the problem. The Traveler, we have a different supply chain, and currently we're going to stay with stainless steel for that one. So if you insist on stainless steel, you can still get a stainless steel in the Traveler size. They're just a little smaller. They're nice because they fit underneath the kitchen cabinet. Now, a kitchen cabinet standard in a house is 18 inches off your countertop. And the kitchen standard filter does not fit under there. The Traveler does. That's why we made that Traveler, was to fit underneath the kitchen. And what I do is the stainless steel, it comes with a little rubber pad ring at the bottom, and I put that on a dishcloth, and then you can slide it forward, take out the water, fill it up, etc., and then slide it back under your countertop, and it's back away, out of the way. You know, so the Traveler, a lot of people like that one, and it's less expensive. But also, for the kitchen standard, we're going to be sending out the we're going to replace it with the stoneware, which is beautiful. It's a classic stoneware filter. And they haven't been as popular because we've had the stainless steel. But all the other companies are going to have this stainless steel issue. They are having it. They're just not telling you. And the only issue is that you should be buying my filters because of the filter elements, because my filter elements take out the arsenic and the fluoride in the filter element. And I'll tell you something else. The add-on filters that the other companies sell to remove arsenic and fluoride only last for 500 gallons. I used to sell those. I used to sell them back in the old days. Then I went with the all-in-one filter element. It was a revolutionary step in the evolution of water filtration, which started in the 1800s with the Daltons in England. I used to sell Daltons. I don't anymore, because they're a very good filter if you just have normal bacteria and sediment and things like that. But you start getting into the modern world of chemicals in the water, of glyphosate and arsenic and fluoride. Those filters don't take out any of that. And so if you live out in the country and you know there's no chemicals in your water, there are very few places left in the United States that are not just horrifically bad with chemicals. Anyway, so that's the, I'm trying to explain what's going on the air here with the water filter situation, and I just have to roll with the punches. Also, just to remind you that if you want to know what's in your water, if you get your water from a municipal water supply, I'm not talking about out in the country if you have a well, but I'm talking about a municipal water supply. If you get your water from there, number one, they are not telling you what's in your water. If you call up your local municipal water supply company, they're going to say, we meet, this is like, it's like a recording almost. They're going to say, we meet federal standards. Well, federal standards have not been updated for 20 or 30 years. It's horrific, and what's in your water is unbelievably bad. And so what I'll do, in the last 5 years, the government has actually gone out and tested the water at all of these local municipalities, actually tested it to see what was in the water, and I have access to those databases. And so if you send me your zip code, email me your zip code, and your water supply company, those two pieces of information, go to my webpage. There's an email address where you can email to. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, and email me your zip code and your water supply company that's on your water bill, just exactly the way it's written on your water bill, your water supply, municipal water supply company. I will email you back with the information of what is in your water. And I'm getting so many requests for this that we're a little bit behind. So if you've emailed in and you've not heard back, yeah, we're still alive. We're still here. And let me explain something, too. I don't have a staff to help me with this. So I do this myself. When I have time, I'm working on the wing generator project. I'm doing a paid cast. I'm doing this show. I do a lot of interviews. Recently, I've been interviews on Jeff Rentz's show. Today, I did another interview with Dr. Bill Deagle. I'm always on John Moore's show. I was on Jim Fetzer's television show. I was on a couple weeks ago. I'm on the Power Hour every month for a show, etc. So I have a lot of interviews I'm doing also. My name keeps coming up. People keep name dropping. They say, why don't you have James McCanny on your show? So I'm getting a lot of requests. I'm actually turning some down. And then there's just a lot going on in the background with the wing generator. That business is takes a lot of attention. So anyway, I'm a busy guy. So if I didn't get back to you right away, then be patient, because plus I got the new business with the shipping containers, the shipping container buildings. That's another business that's taking off. And hopefully soon I'm going to have more help with all of this. But now I'm kind of like the Lone Ranger, and it's very good. I mean, all of this is building. I'm building a very multifaceted enterprise here. But if you see what I'm doing also, I am solving your problems. I just was sent an article by a fan, and it talked about the very wealthy people. This is out in, say, Bellevue, Washington, or in the Silicon Valley, or other places, may as well call it that. But anyway, all of these rich people from big cities are going out and buying land in the country. And there's an article on this. And of course, they're not building big mansions. They're building smaller houses that are, it's kind of like a back to the land movement of the 60s. But these are rich people. These are people that, $2 million houses. And they're going out to the countryside, and they're buying up little farms and ranches and things like that, because they're worried, too, that someday they're going to go to the grocery store, and with their millions of dollars, they're not going to be able to buy a turnip, you know. And so they're thinking about this. And so it's very interesting. But if you look at what they're doing, everything that they're doing is, I have a product for. I have the shipping containers for buildings, very sturdy, very quick to put together. I have the shipping containers for housing. And believe me, you could not build a structure this strong, this sturdy, and for the amount of money that these things cost. These are new shipping containers. Then I have the water filtration. And then with the wing generator, the energy, and plus with the wing generator, I have reverse osmosis, I have filtration, water pumping, anything you need electrical, and of course appliances, if you need welding or if you need whatever you need, electrical to make toast. I have the electrical supply. And so this makes a little ranch or farm autonomous. And so you could, and now I'm introducing the smaller wing generation units, the 2 kilowatt, the 3 kilowatt, the 5 kilowatt, and the 10 kilowatts, so that a small operation can be totally independent. So at any rate, if you can see what I'm doing here, I have a complete package for everything you need. I don't sell seeds. I don't sell flashlights. I don't sell toasters. And I don't sell welders. I do sell EV charging stations for automobiles. So if you want to go electric with your vehicles, then you can put in an electric charging station, and I do sell those. Also electric furnaces. If you want to heat your house with electricity, I can sell you an electric furnace also. But anyway, that's kind of the limit of my product line, but it's a very solid product line. It gives people the ability to be completely off-grid, independent of water and energy, and also provide them with the structure in the shipping container buildings where you can design your own building up to 8 stories high, by the way. And I don't think, if you're building an office building, you could actually use shipping containers to build the office building 8 stories high. And people are doing this kind of thing. This is the new method. And like I said, these people who are millionaires who have mansions out in, the richest part of Seattle, Washington, are building small houses out in the country. They're not building a big, massive mansion. They're building small houses that will accommodate their needs, but then also they have their own garden, their own food, there may be a couple goats. So it's amazing. I'll tell you a little story. I was once worked at a enterprise. It was a electronics company. I was a senior systems engineer, electrical engineering, designing very complicated computer systems for IBM mainframe computers. We were a company that built a computer that did the communications for IBM mainframe computers, and I was in the systems engineering department designing the hardware. That's what I did, and of course, I didn't say this all of my life because the people that don't like me would have come after me and my income. And so I kept that secret. And these were high security jobs, so it wasn't like this was public information. But anyway, I did this for 25 years. Well, all the decades that I was on the radio, was on the Art Bell Show, etc., I was working in these industries. I taught electrical engineering at the university level. I taught astronomy, physics, mathematics at the university level, all of that time over the past decades, going back to when I was had my incident at Cornell. Okay, so anyway, back to the my topic here, but the story I wanted to tell was when I worked for this electronics company building IBM mainframe communications computers, I went into the president's office one day, and I sat down. I had a talk with him about where we should go direction on with the company. And I'm talking to him, and I look above him in the back behind his big presidential chair and desk and everything. I look above the wall behind him, and there's this beautiful vista of the mountains, and there's like a cabin there, etc. And I said, you know, gee, that's beautiful. Where's that? What's that? He said, oh, that's where I'm going to retire when I get done with my working for this company. And I said, you know, if that's your goal, if that's really what you want to do, why don't you just go there right now? And I wasn't being rude or anything. I was being realistic, because in my life, I had taken time out of my life and went out and lived in the country like that. And just to give you a little clue, I lived in central Canada. I lived in the tropics, but I went into central Canada and lived outside for an entire winter. I did not have a shelter. I didn't have a tent even. I literally lived outside. Just to give you an example, I had to sleep on the downside of these big pine trees because the moose would come down to the river at night, and they'd come through in a big pack, and I had to sleep on the downside of the tree because you never knew where the pack of moose were going to come down, because they would eat the greens that were down in the river. That was one of their food sources. So anyway, I literally lived outside. So I took time out of my life to get out into the wilderness, and I talk about this sometimes on my radio show, but I said to this president in his big presidential chair, I said, if that's what you want to do, you should just go and do that. You know, you don't sit here and work and slave in this electronics company for the next 20 years, and then you go out there and two years later you die, you know. But anyway, that's another story. But anyway, these rich people are finding land and they're going out, you know, like hobby farm type of thing, 20 acres, whatever, 10 acres, 5 acres, and putting up their, you know, basically a place to go to because they're worried about the world economy. Back to my product line. My product line is based on that type of person. And of course, you can have water filtration in the city, everything else. But the wind generation system, the wing generator, the containers, the water filters, reverse osmosis with the wing generator, etc. And also, I just want to remind you that I'm stressing this year the whole house water filters. Now, that's a very important topic. I'm just stressing the MR5 and the MR7, my whole house water filter packages, because I believe that you need to stop showering in chemical soup. That's my belief now, is that's the main cause of cancer in the United States and other developing countries because of the pollution in the water. When you step in that shower, you're getting a royal dose through your skin and breathing in those chemicals. And these are additive chemicals. I talked about the forever chemicals. I talked about those last week. They get in your body and you cannot get them out. They stay there until they start causing cancer, etc. Okay, so anyway, I'm going to jump on to my main science topics for the night, but I just wanted to tell you where I'm going with the water filters. I'm stressing the whole house water filters. I think people should, for, you know, like a minimum investment of about $1,500, and then you can buy other accessories, etc. It's an important investment, and there's a post filter. It's an ultraviolet filter that if you're worried about viruses, which is my next story, by the way, the coronavirus from China. If you're worried about viruses, the UV filter will kill viruses. It'll take them out. They will not be in your water supply. And that's a growing concern as we move into the future. Okay, so on to the next topic, the coronavirus that's coming out of China right now. I mean, I was just on John Moore. We spoke about this a lot. If you want to listen to a longer discussion of this, listen to my interview with John Moore yesterday morning, Wednesday morning. We talk a lot about this. But basically, once again, the World Health Organization failed to quarantine these people, failed to quarantine this at the get-go, and now it's out. And I can only presume that this was planned. Once it gets out, once you get 200 people with a virus that's very contagious, that has a very long lifetime, like on a doorknob or whatever, now you're talking about something that will be transmitted if you don't quarantine it right at the beginning. And then the question is, where did this thing come from? All of a sudden, the people in China start getting this deadly virus. It sounds like a laboratory-manufactured virus to me. Just like SARS was, just like the other, there was a whole laundry list of these types of viruses that have come out of China, and somebody is planting them. That is my statement. I believe that somebody is planting these viruses to cause maximum damage and then to get into the United States and shut down basically activity. And this is the New World Order. This is one of the rabbits they have in their hat to shut down a world that's progressing in the way that they don't want to see it. They want to see people under control. They want to see nationalized medicine. They want to see required vaccinations. They want to see economies that are stagnated because they can't grow. They want to see you groveling in the for the government. They want the government forcing vaccinations on people, or like in China, they have shutdown. They have a lockdown where the people cannot go out of their houses. This is, this is what the New World Order wants. They don't want freedom. They don't want you to have freedom of choice, etc., which is, by the way, something that's coming up. I'm going to talk about this also, is the freedom of choice. This is the pro-life movement. The pendulum is swinging the other way, and I want to make just a quick comment about that in a second, but I'll finish up about the coronavirus first. What should you do to protect yourself regarding the coronavirus? Well, be aware, you're going to start seeing, apparently there's already cases in the United States at school institutions. One I heard, can't confirm it myself, was the University of Miami, where you have thousands, tens of thousands of people there every day. It's going to come to the United States. The World Health Organization has failed once again, and I can only presume that this is on purpose, because you couldn't be in a position of that level of authority and let this thing get out of the box. Okay, quick comment on the idea of choice. Now, there's this the concept that has been put forward with the Roe versus Wade Supreme Court decision to allow abortions. And one of the main arguments is that women have choice over their body, that they have the right to choose. But the real choice came months previously when that woman allowed a man to impregnate her. That's where the real choice came, and it was an irresponsible choice if she ends up months later with an unwanted pregnancy. So the real choice was already made. The woman made her choice to become pregnant. And it's by accident? No. You don't get pregnant by shopping at Walmart. There's only one thing that causes you to get pregnant. And you made your choice to allow that to happen in your life. So you made your choice. And so the choice now is the pendulum that's swinging is that that life from the time of conception is a real life, and it's because it's in the mother, she does not have the right any more than, for example, if a man considers, say, everything he owns in his house, does he have a right to kill his family because they're in his domicile? And that's the same thing. Does a woman have a right to kill the baby just because it's growing inside of her? And these are questions that are going to be the public is going to be faced with. But once again, the real issue here is if you come to the question of choice, if the woman claims responsibility for her body, she already made a bad decision months earlier, and that's the choice. That's the real choice. Real choice is to allow a man to impregnate her, and she is walking around, okay, now she's already made her choice, and that's the way the pendulum is swinging, that the baby in the mother does not have a voice. These are human beings, and the baby has protection. And this idea that, well, it's not a baby till it's born, I don't agree with. Excuse me. And so that is, you might disagree, whatever. But the original choice, the original failure of the woman to make a good choice does not then allow her to make a choice to kill the baby later on. She already made a choice. It was a bad choice. And now the baby is the one that's going to pay for it. Okay, so anyway, that's my opinion. Everybody has their own opinion. That's my opinion. And the pendulum is swinging back, believe me. And there's going to be a day, I believe, when this they're simply going to say to women, okay, you have to not get pregnant. There's a million ways to stop from getting pregnant. And the best way is not to allow a man to impregnate you. That is the best way. It's called abstinence with a capital A. Abstinence is the best way to not get pregnant. So when you make the choice, and if it's by mistake, is it a mistake? Yeah, it was a big mistake. And was it an error? No, it wasn't an error. this is the situation. Prevention, is the only way to stop unwanted pregnancies. And that decision comes months earlier than the decision to have an abortion. I'm going to move on to my next topic. NASA has shut down the Spitzer Infrared Space Telescope. It has given us decades and decades of information, but as with all NASA projects, the problem is that they interpret the data in only a set given way. And so, as with the Hubble Space Telescope, all other kinds of equipment that NASA has been using, we as citizens are paying for this, and NASA is riding the gravy train here and not allowing anybody else into the arena of interpretation of data. And so, by the way, I'm on my paid cast, and also on my Patreon channel, posting my first one-hour session contradicting the new so-called masterclass of Neil deGrasse Tyson. He has supposedly put on a masterclass to tell you how to think, but here's a guy that is what I call a Tier 3 scientist. He's a spokesperson for the science industry, and they only give you one side of the story. It's a very limited one side of the story. And the biggest thing they rely on is this massive amount of information that NASA and the other standard space science industries have accumulated, but is also a monopoly. They don't let anybody else into the playpen. They keep it, they keep all the data, they keep all the equipment, and that's the case with the Spitzer Space Telescope. I know some of the people that work on that, the astronomers, etc., And basically, like I say, they're riding the gravy train. They get what I call scientific vacations. They get their way paid to scientific meetings all over the world. And as long as they don't rock the boat and start propounding other theoretical work, they have to stay with the guidelines, the theoretical guidelines, what I call the axioms of astronomy. Okay, on to the next topic. Roger Stone, if you remember him, was convicted of lying in this case with Wikipedia, etc. Supposedly, it was a sham trial. Let's just put it that way. There's no question about it. But he wants to make an appeal. And I think it's very important for him to appeal because the trial where they tried him was just a sham. That's all you can say. But that's the best thing you can say about it. So anyway, he's looking for input of basically $500,000, and I'm encouraging people to chip in there. Here's a guy that stuck his neck out to help elect President Trump, to expose the Clinton empire for what it was, and his reward is getting slam dunked in this legal proceeding that ruined his life, the life of his family and his extended family. And so it's very important for him to make an appeal where this sham trial can be exposed for what it is. And so if you can donate, just go to the following webpage. It's called RogerStoneLegalDefenseFund.com. I think it's .com. I might be wrong on that. So, yes, it turns out to be .com. And so, once again, I'm going to read this off. It's five words strung together, no dots or dashes. Roger Stone Legal Defense Fund.com. And these are people that are being destroyed because they opposed the Clinton empire. There's many more. And Roger Stone, I just an honest person, you know, and been in politics going way back. But anyway, that's all I'm going to say. If you feel you can throw in even a $5 or whatever would help, once again, I'll just read that off because I think this is important to help these people who gave a lot of effort for this democracy and for this republic we live in, and now are being slam dunked because of it. Roger Stone Legal Defense Fund.com. Okay, on to the next topic. SpaceX at it again, launching 60. Remember the very first batch of these, they're called Starlink 3 satellites, and remember they blink up in the sky. And finally, astronomers woke up. I've been saying this all along since they first announced this, that, hey, you can have blinking lights up in the sky. And these moron science news announcers are saying, oh, isn't that wonderful? We're going to look up and we're going to see all these blinking satellites. Well, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me that somebody thought that was a good idea. And they just launched 60 more. There's supposed to be thousands of these producing 5G worldwide. You are in a mesh beaming down on you 5G signals, and there are going to be thousands of these, and they blink. I mean, who is thinking of this stuff? I mean, isn't there somebody with a brain somewhere that just says, okay, no more. You can't do this. In fact, if, you know, as far as I'm concerned, go up there with somebody send up some satellites, take these things out. That's what I would do, just destroy these people's investment, take them out. You know, they're out in outer space. It's like out in the middle of the ocean someplace. They don't have protection under any law. Take them out. That's my, you know, as soon as they put up 60, take them out. If I had the wherewithal, that's what I would be doing. What a ridiculous, economic venture. Last week's show, I talked about the infinite universe. And I said that nobody could challenge me on this. Nobody could prove that I'm wrong. And then some people quip, well, there's calculations that show due to the Hubble constant and redshift that the universe has an extension of 13.5 billion years, or whatever the latest ridiculous number is. Those are calculations based on interpretation of redshift data, which is incorrect. The redshift has nothing to do with distance. So this is an artificial construct that is a calculation based on the interpretation of redshift of quasars. Okay? And now let me be very specific here. If, as we have built bigger telescopes and bigger telescopes, as you look out into space, in places where you didn't see anything before, you see something, not only something, but in the case of the Hubble Space Telescope, remember there was that black spot, the famous black area in space where NASA could never see anything and telescopes could never see anything. So they focused the Hubble Space Telescope on that black spot, only to discover that there were billions of galaxies out there. And so this is my point. You can never build a telescope big enough, if the universe is infinite, you can never build a telescope big enough to see all the way to the end of the universe. It would be like counting. Let's count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, let's keep counting for days, for weeks, for months. Let's take all the molecules of water in the oceans of the Earth. Count them all. There's a finite number. It's not infinite. It's a big number, but there's a finite number. That number is teeny compared to infinity. Take all the water molecules in our galaxy. Of all of the, you know, the water planets, of all of the water in outer space, count all of the water molecules in our galaxy. It's a finite number. There's a limited number. It's a big, big number, bigger than anybody could write on a piece of paper or think about. But it's finite, it's limited, and it's a small baby number compared to infinity. So the same applies for telescopes. I don't care how big a telescope you build, or even if you interpret the redshift for your measure of the distance to the known universe, you still are not seeing out, you know, every time you build a bigger telescope, you see something else. And so it's in the redshift and the Hubble's constant, what they tell you in the news media for the edge of the universe is an interpretation of data. It's not a measurement. And so I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here relative to measuring distances in outer space. Okay, so the distances to, let's say, the nearest star. How do we know how far away the nearest star is? We don't need a redshift measurement to determine that, because you take a telescope and you train it on that region of the heavens, and you have all the background stars, which are way, way out there, and then this star is close. So you take a picture of that region of the heavens at one point of Earth in its orbit, and then you wait till Earth goes all the way around the other side of the sun, and you take a picture of that region of the sky. And that nearby star has moved a little. It's called triangulation. And there's other terms for it in astronomy, but basically it's the same method you would use in surveying to triangulate a point at a distance to try and locate a point. Okay, so it's called triangulation, and you can determine very exactly how far away our nearest star is. Okay, and but when you get out very far, triangulation doesn't work because your baseline, which is the diameter of the Earth's orbit, is too small to give any change, significant change, motion in most of the stars. So triangulation doesn't work. It only works out a very short distance away from Earth, out into the galaxy. And it certainly does not work on scales of the universe. On galactic scales, it simply doesn't work because the baseline of our orbit around the sun is just too small. If we could get a telescope out much farther, say out by Pluto, and then get another telescope out in the other direction, then we'd have a much bigger baseline and we could start to measure objects much farther away. And that would be an interesting experiment because then we could start seeing objects with redshifts, and we could easily prove that the redshift has nothing to do with the distance to the object. But anyway, scientists are not going to do that because it would disprove their little theory. Okay, so I just wanted to reiterate what I was talking about last week about the infinite universe. So getting back to the main topic, can anybody disprove my claim that the universe is infinite in extent? And the answer is no, because no matter what technique you use or what type of telescope you build or how big a telescope you build, you can never see to the end of the infinite universe. It's like counting water molecules. You can only see so far. And so now the question is, if you could go to that distance, say that they claim that the universe is 13.5 billion light years away, okay, you would have to go to that point, or at least halfway out, and then reobserve. Can you see anything beyond there? And by the way, once again, that 13.5 billion light year distance to the edge of the universe is a fictitious number, because the redshift that they're seeing depends on the non-uniform electric field that surrounds these fusion-based objects, which are quasars. It's very easy to prove that what they're doing is totally false. Halton Arp, a guy who I communicated with back in the 70s when I was working on my work, and in the 1980s after my stint at Cornell there, Halton Arp took pictures of quasars that were attached to galaxies, and they had very different redshifts. And so, and not just in one wavelength, but in all wavelengths, in X-rays and ultraviolet, invisible light, etc. And there was a very definite link connecting them. And he didn't just find one, but he found hundreds of them and cataloged them and published them. And there were other people like scientist Bainbridge took up this fight also. Vast numbers of astronomers and physicists took up the fight that all of this money was being spent on research relative to the Big Bang, and there was no Big Bang. There doesn't make any sense. The physics that they're basing on it, the Hubble constant, the measurement of redshifts, etc., did not make sense. There were all kinds of contradictions. So people wrote letters to the National Science Foundation, to other funding bodies that funded this Big Bang research, and they got a stonewall. They got a complete stonewall. It was, it was like, it's kind of like the global climate change thing, where, there's a group of scientists who've gained control of the funding mechanism, and that's the only thing for a long time that got funded. And so that's the way it is with whether you like it or not, that's the situation. And so the situation with Big Bang cosmology is that that is the only thing that gets funded. It's a monopoly. Nobody else gets a word in edgewise. Nobody else can publish in the so-called peer-reviewed, respectable peer-reviewed journals. That's why I don't have anything to do with those journals. And by the way, real science, real mathematics does not get published in respectable peer-reviewed journals. I get people that say that, well, you should submit your work to the peer-reviewed journals. Well, no, I have a subpage on my webpage that explains why I don't submit anything to peer-reviewed journals. And there's I have a page that's called the Top 10 Reasons Why I Don't Submit Material to Peer-Reviewed Journals. And it's a very long and very good list. Any one of those reasons would be fully 100% good reason for not publishing in a peer-reviewed journal. And one of the reasons is that real research does not get published in peer-reviewed journals. It's a little, it's a mutual admiration society is what it is. That's all it is. And it's a very expensive mutual admiration society in which you are paying people to be like famous stars, like the Terry Taus of the world in mathematics. They get to be the reigning superstars at the expense of keeping everybody out. There's this belief in mathematics that only good mathematics can come from Harvard or Stanford or some of the, say, top five universities where mathematical analysis is king. So what I'm saying, though, about cosmology is when Carl Sagan did his Cosmos series back in the 1979 to 81 period, that set the stage for all funding, all peer-reviewed journal articles, all other subjects like geology. I'm going to be talking more about geology and plate tectonics and the fact that plate tectonics is a myth. Plate tectonics does not work. The idea that the plates of the earth are plates, like a plate you hold food on the table, is a myth. The earth has sectors, and where they join together, there's some activity, but this is not, you know, the plate tectonics simply doesn't work. It has a nice for subduction. You see these nice drawings or animation showing this in a textbook, but it has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with reality. Okay, I'm going to move on now and get back to this coronavirus. I want to cap what you should be doing, what you should know about it, and the symptoms, etc. What do you need to know about this? So the best information that I have gathered so far is that it's a cousin of the SARS virus, and there was another virus out of China called MERS. And my belief is these are laboratory viruses, just like Lyme's disease was the mad cow disease is a laboratory virus. They make it sound like, oh, these just happened in nature and they got into nature. Well, nature has been going for thousands and thousands of years without the Lyme disease. The Lyme disease was literally known to be a laboratory virus. It got into the deer population and wild animal population, and now there's potential for mad cow disease getting into the deer population, destroying million-dollar industries for deer hunters. And so, anyway, these are laboratory viruses. My estimation is that MERS and SARS and now this newer coronavirus, for which they don't really have a name that I've seen yet, like SARS had a significance, like severe respiratory syndrome or something like that. I didn't see a name for this one yet. It's simply called a coronavirus. And these are typically viruses that are found in animals, and they can be transmitted to people, and then people can transmit to other people. So they don't know a lot about this particular virus right now as of today. Apparently, there's about 8,000 cases in China. A number of days ago, there were 190. So this is growing exponentially. It's growing at a very rapid rate, and it does appear that there are quarantine measures being put on all over. But they should have quarantined this immediately, shut this down and in China. But they let it get out. And once you get out to, say, 8,000 people, then you don't know. Then the contact those people had might be with 100,000 people, and those 100,000 people aren't sick yet, and they're carrying the virus around giving it to other people. This could have been shut down, just like the Fukushima reactors could have been shut down immediately. They could have been shut down and saved, but the Japanese would not allow it, and there were companies in Europe that could have gone in there and shut it down and prevented all of that damage. But due to stupidity, and they did not allow that to happen. So anyway, this virus, what should you do? Well, of course, don't go to China. If you're traveling, then you can wear a face mask, but basically don't touch stuff. Don't touch railings. Don't touch, you know, if you have to go to the bathroom, line the toilet seat with those little pads that they provide in the toilet. It's like a little pad you can put on the toilet. Don't eat before you go on a long airplane ride. because then you'd have to go to the bathroom. So don't eat, don't drink water before you go on a long airplane or train ride or something like that. Avoid public restrooms. That would be number one. And then also just when you get home, wash your hands. Washing your hands, cut your fingernails. Make sure your fingernails are cut short because underneath your fingernails is a lot of contamination that comes in from all different sources. So at any rate, be careful of your eyes, your nose, and your mouth are all mucous membranes, and you want to be careful not to contaminate yourself or other people by transmitting from fluids from your eyes, nose, mouth, etc. And so also just watch the news and see if there's cases in your community. There are pictures that are coming in from China. Some of the mega cities in China, these are cities with 300 million people, mega cities, the kind of cities that you can't even imagine. I know people that have gone there and they just said, as far as you can see are buildings to house this massive population of China. And some of these cities are now ghost cities, basically, where nobody is allowed to go out of their own apartment. They have to shut it down completely. And then when people get sick, then they communicate with the health industry, but they have to have all the food. They can't go out and buy food. It's a big mess. I mean, you have a population density like China, you know, billions of people in a very concentrated area. Not good. So anyway, just keep tuned to this. And I would say avoid public places because the World Health Organization failed you. They failed to quarantine this immediately. It could have been stopped, but now the genie is out of the bottle and it cannot be put back in. More on this next week. So anyway, once again, I got about a minute left here. Go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. I've got the shipping containers. I've got the wing generator systems, the smaller ones right now, and the 2, 3, 5, 10 and kilowatt sizes, the water filtration products. Remember that it's going to take me a day or two, a couple days, to upgrade the webpage. So the kitchen standard is going to be replaced with the stoneware water filter. And, of course, my water filter elements, there's no change there. The stoneware, by the way, will take both the standard size and the imperial size water filter elements. So that all stays the same. And then the travelers, if you insist on having stainless steel, will have the travelers in stock. I think those are coming in on the 17th, the next shipment of those, and we'll have a lot of those in stock. And so at any rate, that's just a couple days away, and so those will still be available. If you put your order in, then we will ship them as soon as we have them. We never miss on shipping orders. And that's very important because in this world of craziness of viruses, I would suggest that if you don't have a water filter, get one now. And I would really suggest getting a whole house water filter with the UV final filter, which kills viruses. I am out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.